man who passes the sentence should swing the sword.
I've won every battle, but I'm losing this war.
Show them how it feels to lose what they love.
Everyone is mine to torment.
The long night is coming. Dead, come with it.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have seen all the episodes of Game of Thrones, the HBO series, but have not read any of the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin.
My name is Joanna Robinson. I've seen every episode of the Game of Thrones series and read every book by George R.R. Martin, except the one that he forgot to finish on time.
And I'm Neil Miller. I have seen all the episodes of Game of Thrones and watched all the DVD commentary tracks for all the episodes of Game of Thrones. And I've read all those books, too.
And we're back for season six, sort of. This will be our season six preview episode. We've got some trailers to talk about. We've got some questions from you. And, of course, the season has already premiered for those lucky few people who managed to make it to the super secret premiere, none of us being among them. So we can't talk that specifically about it. But because we're a storm of spoilers, and now we've been around for about two seasons, we've accrued some reviews on iTunes. And we thought, why not make that a part of the show? So, Joanna, let's kick off with our first review.
Yeah, mostly, guys, this is to encourage you to leave more reviews. We love all of your reviews, but please leave us a review. The first one I'm going to do because it's an homage to a classic Fighting in the War Room review, and if you don't listen to our Mothership podcast, you should. But this one's from Beetle Pink, and it's called The Perfect Mix. And it says, oh, I've never had to read a review aloud, and it's embarrassing. Okay. Joanna has the best voice in the biz and brings knowledge and energy to all her pods. Dave, the comic expert, Thrones non-book reader, is the perfect moderator and brings a fresh, non-expert feel as he keeps things moving. And Neil is everyman crazy, always ready to go over the top with bold yet fun proclamations. Dave's the bread, Joe's the peanut butter, and Neil's the jelly that wishes he was a starburst. A perfect trio. And I'm going to read one more, which was just left yesterday. So I'm going
to... Can I just respond to that for a second?
Sure.
That is the greatest jelly-related thing anyone's ever said about me. So thank you.
And this last one that I'm going to read was just left yesterday by someone named ASCOT93. It's called What a Fun Podcast. And it says, I just came across this podcast about a month ago, and I'm quickly working my way through all of them. Every episode makes me laugh. Joanna, Dave, and Neil work so well together. They all bring a different perspective to the podcast, and I especially love hearing each week's new crackpot theory. I'll definitely be looking forward to this podcast every week when the new season comes out. So I just read two enormously positive reviews. There are some negative reviews, and I promise we will read those as well going forward. But if you want to leave us a review, hopefully positive, please do over on iTunes. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I feel like we should make the negative ones call into the show and say that shit to our
peeps.
I'm kidding. You guys are fine.
Those people obviously already know what this show is, but as we heard from our second review, sometimes people are just discovering it, and season six is going to push on beyond George R. R. Martin's outline from the novels, which was originally the premise that this show started on. So let's just make sure we're all on the same ground going forward. We covered some stuff that's talked about on the internet, specifically like leaked photos or speculation about weird frame by frames, things that are definitely going beyond what would be book knowledge, which used to be the spoilers of our title. We've extended on as the series has extended on, but we don't want anybody to think that this is still like an okay place for book readers that don't want to know any of the story until they get it in the book. We have talked a little bit about that last episode when we heard about some people who were going to give up the show until the new book came out. If you are one of those people, this podcast isn't for you yet, but it will be archived on fightinginthewarroom.com and on iTunes. So when you're ready for it, come on back and hear how ridiculously wrong we were about things.
I think that's what people enjoy the most, is how wrong we were. They tell us all the time.
Yeah. When Joanna and I were doing a Legend of Korra podcast on Nickelodeon, we got a lot of stuff horribly wrong, and it's fun even now to go back and hear how we had like perverted entire storylines to make ourselves feel better, and it ended up being nowhere close to that, which I'm probably personally going to be guilty of with this upcoming season of Game of Thrones.
Are you referring to hashtag Tens and Dies?
I'm referring to a lot of people dying that we claimed were coming up, and like a lot of connections that ended up not working out. But specifically for me in season six, I'm interested to see if I'm more on the nose or completely off with what I predict happens to some of the characters that are beyond their books, because without any book knowledge, I'm wondering if like my basis for how I think characters are and act being based entirely on show are going to end up differing, especially as we start bouncing back and forth between like the past with these like brand visions and the present, which is sort of like forging new ground. If they're departing from the novels, maybe I'm the soothsayer this time.
Sure. If you had to make one bold prediction, I think we should all answer this, of like which named character dies this season, who do you predict? And not someone who dies in the book. I'll start with Neil.
Oh, man. Pressure's on. Named character that dies. I'm going with Roose Bolton.
Oh, yeah. Good guess.
I think he's not going to make it out of this season. And I think it's probably going to be his own kid.
Yeah.
But who knows? All kinds of people would like to kill that guy.
If I had to guess, yeah. Ramsay killing Roose. That sounds good. Dave?
I'm going to say end of the season, Cersei bites it.
Ooh.
That's a big one.
I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, because we've talked about how if they end next season, which they may not, but if they end next season, how we'll sort of move further and further away from King's Landing towards the inevitable battle at the Wall. And so the King's Landing stuff becomes less important. So one of the main Lannisters dying sounds reasonable to me. Mm-hmm. My guess is, I have to choose between two good candidates. I'm going to go with Tormund, Giant's Bane.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite guy.
I know.
All my favorites die, though, so that's probably right.
So see how wrong we are by end of season. Or maybe Dave is the captain now.
Yep. I've followed Lena Headey through Terminator, and I'm now going to probably watch her exit another series that I like. But at least this one won't end prematurely. Or with a weird cliffhanger that involved the lead singer of Garbage. But so many different flashbacks.
I remember that series. That was weird.
That was a weird series. I liked what he was trying to do, but that's neither here nor there, because this is a podcast about Game of Thrones. And since we last spoke, we have got two different trailers for the season that I think last episode we were saying wouldn't it be badass if HBO was just like, leak our screener episodes for season 5, will you? You get nothing going into season 6. That ended up not being the case. We got a quote-unquote Red Band trailer, and then trailer 2, which is like super weird to search for because one's called Red Band, not trailer 1, and then it skips immediately to trailer 2. So I guess the Faces trailer is trailer 1. Unimportant. between the two, I think we get to see a lot of stuff between the, you know, Battle of the Bastards, which I think we talked about previously. But I think Joanna was the one who slammed together Sansa and Davos being in the same place between Red Band and Trailer 2. That's a good
spot. Yes. In the first trailer, Sansa's in a sort of a northern-looking, possibly, room with a chandelier behind her head. And in the second trailer, it looks like Davos is on the other side of that frame with the same chandelier behind his head. And House Mormont's sigil also behind his head. So we're guessing, speculating, that Sansa and Davos team up to enlist the northern houses, including House Mormont, to help them fight against the Boltons, which is great because Davos is always a character we rooted for. Stannis was a problematic leader. So to see Davos as the Alexander Hamilton to Sansa Stark's George Washington is fantastic. So...
yeah, yeah, and I think later in the battle scene, we see that the same bear sigil is amongst the flags, so it looks like Davos is successful. Hopefully he's with Sansa.
Well, we also know from the trailer, I mean, as Neil and I both pointed out, this second trailer so rewards scrutiny of sigils, so much so that my secret wish is that it was for book readers, and it's probably not. I'm probably reading too much into it, but there was so much sigil information in the second trailer. But what we've pieced together from a lot of footage is that it looks like at least one of the northern houses that used to be loyal to the Starks betray them and ally with the Boltons, and it looks like that's House Umber, which is sad because the great John Umber and like all of that was... you know, that's a house you don't want to see go to the dark side necessarily. So,
wait, and the Umbers, if I remember correctly, the Umber, the Great John was the one who had his hand,
his finger,
his finger bitten off by Rob's wolf. And he was he the same one that got beheaded later for releasing the Lannister kids, or is that a different?
That's the Karstarks.
The Karstarks. Okay. I always get the, you know, those big hairy northern lords.
All bearded all white. Same. Not all bearded white dudes. They all look the same.
Politics wise, has it just been enough time since the Boltons have had Winterfell that the Umbers are going to switch, or is it about the wolf finger biting?
I believe Greyjoy Umber dies, not through wolf bite or beheading, and so it's about who's taking over the family. And I think there was a casting call. There were several casting calls out for northern lords and northern ladies, and one of them, I believe, was something like a Craven, sort of, you know, like a someone who could be swayed.
And there was actually, I was looking through pictures from, I think this was on BuzzFeed, and there was one guy at the premiere that they showed a picture of him on the red carpet, and they were like, he plays Small John Umber.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you. you know, that's probably the guy.
Yeah.
he's the great John's, you know, son.
Yeah, you can't all be great, John. Sometimes you're a small John. So that's the Battle of Bastards. We're going to see a lot of the northern houses. There's another one that I can't remember what they're called. Hornwood? Please don't get mad at me, book readers. Something like corn is in there somewhere. I don't know if we've bored everyone to death already, but it'll be interesting to see how well this goes over with TV watchers.
House Hornwood.
Okay, good.
They're in the north.
Like the Mormonts you can cling to because we know Jorah and Jorah and Jaor. I don't know how to pronounce Lord Commander Mormont's first name.
Jaor.
Jaor. And and we
just call him Joe.
We met Lyanna Stark off screen. She was that sassy young lady who wrote a letter to Stannis.
Lyanna Mormont.
Yeah. Did I say Stark?
You said Stark.
Oh, sorry. Lyanna Mormont.
Stark on the brain.
Yeah, we met her last season. So, like, House Mormont, I think, is not going to be too hard of a sell for viewers. But when you bring in the Hornwoods and the Umbers and all that sort of stuff, I am interested to see how well they handle all this northern stuff. It's important to remember, and this is another speculative thing, given that we know that the Umbers, based on sigil placement, ally with the Boltons, it's important to remember that Osha and Rickon were headed for House Umber when they left Bran.
Dun, dun, dun.
So if Ramsay has a Stark hostage, it might be the tiniest one.
That makes sense.
It's a speculation.
I also think that the way that it'll end up playing out is like you have these, you know, one or two main houses where they talk about who they are, and then it's the rest of it is just like a bunch of big burly people in a room. Like it was like at the beginning of season two where they're like King in the North, and it's just right. Like, I guess that's the whole North. That's cool. Yeah. Whereas like in the books, it's like he painstakingly goes through all of the houses.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I feel like I know all these people. But in the show, it's just like, here's a bunch of people wearing fur. And it's like, cool.
I think we have a huge arc now. It should be a heist movie that jumps from Davos at like the Mormont house. And then like smooth jazz comes in and it's just a montage of them walking into a whole bunch of different halls and like eating a whole bunch of salt and bread and just like rolling their eyes at each other.
And there's always a kid sitting at the dais smashing nuts like Rickon did in the first season.
It's become like a thing. It's like the secret we're with the Starks. It's like you put one of your kids out and make them smash some nuts.
The other thing we should mention about the Battle of the Bastards, which is something we've been talking about on the show, is that in the first trailer, which came out, you know, what, a couple weeks ago at this point, we believe that you can see Jon Snow himself riding in the background of the Battle of the Bastards. HBO got mad at me for saying that, but I believe...
which usually means that you're pretty much right.
Probably right. This aligns with other sort of set photos that we've seen. So
Entertainment Weekly tried to debunk you. That means you're right.
So we have said this before. We don't think Kit Harington, a.k.a. Jon Snow, is coming back until a couple episodes into the season. So do you guys think Battle of the Bastards is going to be like an episode 9 type thing, or since they're showing so much footage of it, which they usually don't do for later episodes, is it going to be as early as like episode 6 or something like that?
I feel like it's even like an episode 4 or 5 thing, because I think that there are other things that they will set up later. Like I think the Siege of Riverrun might actually be a big set piece, so that could be something, you know, in the later. You know, because think about it logistically. So, like, think about it just from Brienne and Pod. So, Brienne and Pod, we know, are still in the north. They're probably still looking for Sansa. They may rescue Sansa, and they may be the vehicle that gets Sansa away from the Bolton hunting parties. So, that's all reasonable. And then they have to go. We see in the trailer, sigil watching, that they make it to Riverrun, because we can see the Tully banners behind them. So, that's a lot of time for them to go from the north, where they are outside Winterfell now, all the way through the Riverlands.
I mean, it's not if they use Baelish's
right, but they are not Littlefinger. They don't have the
giant Mockingbird.
Well, we don't know where Littlefinger meets up with Sansa, so isn't it possible they have the giant Mockingbird?
That's true. So I feel like the Siege of Riverrun, which we kind of know is going to be there because it's in the trailer. Is going to be the later battle.
Well, we know that they're going to River. Oh, no, you're right. We see the Lannister camp. Yes.
Yeah, we see Jaime riding through the camp. Yeah. So I think I it does feel like an episode 4, episode 5.
I mean, thing. But if that John doesn't
awesome come awesome way to go.
If John doesn't come back till episode 4 or right. Maybe like I feel like John needs to be back for at least an episode and a half before he's like leading a garrison, right?
It like, depends. So,
like, fresh from the grave, you're ready for war?
I feel like
ready
we've talked about this. So, okay, so you're Jon Snow, and you wake up, and Melisandre's there, obvs. You know, and I think the first thing, what's the first thing he does? Maybe he and the Wildlings just take off, and they're like, you know what, screw this. I'm not part of the Night's Watch anymore, because I've died. And I'm just going to go to Winterfell and take back my homeland, you know? Or maybe he is awake for a couple of minutes and somebody's like, hey, the Boltons have your sister. And he's like, we're just going to go. And they end up there around the same time that Sansa and Davos are there. I don't know. It's weird.
My prediction is episode 6. You think 4 or 5. Dave, what do you think?
Later than episode 6.
Okay.
Oh, you think it's more like an episode 8, 9 type of deal?
I think you have a little bit before John comes back. You have one whole episode where John comes back that's just devoted to the backstory of why that is. And then you have a period of time where Jon Snow, being a leader, takes the lay of the land and doesn't go south to Winterfell necessarily just because he's a Stark, but because something at the Wall becomes untenable. Maybe because Bran comes down and is like, I've seen some shit. It's coming for real.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the White Walker stuff... Well, actually, no. I've just changed my mind just now. I thought in watching a lot of the trailers and the behind-the-scenes footage that, like, all of the White Walker stuff was vision-wise. Even the stuff that we've seen of the White Walkers that there's... Especially in this certain special effects video, there seems to be the White Walkers invading the Three-Eyed Raven's cave. That was in a visual, not the most recent visual effects video, but the one before that, that was about being a cinematographer of all things. You saw White Walkers in the Three-Eyed Raven's cave. And so I thought that was, okay, this is, you guys, this is a spoiler stuff or speculation stuff, because it's not spoiler. It's all released by HBO. This is speculation stuff I'm talking about that has nothing to do with the books, but us playing like spoiler detective, right? Is in one FX video, you see the White Walkers invade the Three-Eyed Raven cave. And I thought that was a vision. I thought Bran was going to have a vision of, like, what's the worst case scenario? The White Walkers come here, they go to the Wall. If we don't stop them, they're going to invade everywhere. You know, like, that's a nightmare. We see him encounter the Night's King. I thought that was all a vision. But in the most recent FX video, that was about... I forget what it was about, but a lot of it had to do with Dragon Slayer.
It was about, like, the effects...
Yeah, I like guess the, just special the effects.
Props people,
or something like that.
Yeah.
You see a shot of what appears to be Hodor, Mira, Bran, and a Children of the Forest shagging ass with Bran in a wheelbarrow, which makes me think that they're running away from an invasion of White Walkers. So let's say the White Walkers do invade the Three-Eyed Raven's cave. Let's say Max von Sydow does a repeat of his performance in Star Wars and dies to protect our heroes. And our heroes
shows up, does like 5 minutes.
Yeah. And our heroes go running out the back door of the cave with Bran in tow. And then Bran gets to the Wall and is like, it's bad, man. It's bad. As Dave said, I've seen some shit. All right. That's my crackpot putting together two
sentences
from FX videos that HBO wishes we would not piece together.
I like most about your theory is that it makes me sound smart.
It's always my goal, Dave. It's always my goal.
But yeah, I like that idea. Or like even that, like if Sansa shows up at the Wall and they start like banding together northern forces with like Davos anyway, I think they could do that before Jon comes back even, because Davos is just going to...
Oh yeah, I think Davos is...
Yeah, like maybe Sansa shows up and Davos takes off with her before John. They even figure out how John's going to come back. That would make sense.
I think that's quite likely.
I like that idea.
And then there's like, we know John's back, but maybe Sansa doesn't. And they're like, they're flaying our Boltons. Or no, the Boltons are flaying our wildlings, I think probably is how it's going to go. And then John's like, not my fucking wildlings.
Not without my torment.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's going to be great. It's like, stop taking my gingers away from me.
Aw. You guys, it's hard out there for a ginger. I'll have to say.
It really is hard out there for a ginger.
All right. So we've talked a lot about Wall stuff. What like Dany, Tyrion, Dothraki stuff have we seen in the trailers?
I could try to figure this out. So... there's another red woman in Meereen who is all like, nah. And Varys is like, magic, fuck that. And then Tyrion's like, maybe we shouldn't chain up these dragons. And then goes down into the thing. And then what may be the same sequence or maybe a different sequence, the dragon negans the camera.
Dragon did make in the camera with flame instead of a baseball bat.
I hope listeners are watching all of television.
Yeah, you have to watch all of television, I guess, to get that. Or just the two most popular shows on television, either way. Yes. And Neil, do you want to talk about Quentin Martell?
Well, yeah. So I think really the only two interesting things that we know about the Dany / Meereen storyline, one is Tyrion, which I remember suspecting this when the first trailer showed him like with a torch in a hallway. And it's like, oh, I wonder where he's going. Why would he need to be sneaking around in Marine? The idea that he's going to go and try to free those dragons, which is something that we saw in the books with Quentin Martell, who is one of the sons. He was Doran's son, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was Doran's son. He sent him to kind of woo Daenerys. She actually rebukes him because she's still a Marine at the time. And then he decides that since the Martells have kind of this co-lineage situation with Targaryens. Yeah. They were the friendliest with the Targaryens for a while. He was like, well, I have dragon's blood in me. And he goes down and gets roasted.
So the question is Tyrion going to get roasted a la Quentin? Or does he have more Targaryen blood than Quentin Martell ever did? And is he going to like emerge from it like Daenerys does? And that's when we find out that Tyrion is a secret Targaryen.
Well, and what we know about the Game of Thrones, the HBO marketing team. Okay.
Dave's like, not another secret Targaryen.
Well, so that's an old theory too. But what we know about HBO's marketing team is they're really into misdirection. They spent an entire offseason on the Jon Snow thing, even though it's obvious to everyone. But they also do these little misdirection things. So those two shots could be not actually connected.
Yes.
Tyrion could escape some other way, maybe by just moving out of the way of the fire. Somebody could come in and get fried instead.
John Grey Worm. Yeah.
Right. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where they wouldn't show a major character death in the trailer. They're just not going to do that.
No, but that's what I mean is like.
So it's either in there for book readers to fuel the theory, or it's just in there for like a goofy misdirection thing where it's like, oh, what's going to happen to Tyrion? He'll be fine.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think Tyrion will be fine.
One way or the other.
I guess you're right that either the question is, does someone else get Quentin Martelled, or is Tyrion a secret Targaryen, or third option, it's all misdirection?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? This whole season could be about people being lit on fire and then not burning.
Yeah.
You know, like that could be the Jon thing where they light. We've talked about this before. It's where, you know, maybe Sir Alistair gets his way and they light him on fire and he stands up in the middle of the fire.
This is like my second season doing this, and you guys get me way too excited for stuff that never happens. I feel like Tyrion gets torched and lives through Dragonfire, and like the show's like, you thought that the Jon Snow thing was the only thing. Well, screw you, George R. R. Martin book fans. Try to avoid this one. seems like wishful thinking.
It is. It is. But I think the ultimate point is that Tyrion's going to be fine either way. It's just a question of whether, I mean, we're getting down to the end here. So if they've got big cards to play where there's a bunch of secret Targaryens and the three heads of the dragon thing is real, then they might start rolling it out.
Right, because our theory, the prevailing Dragon Rider theory, is that the three Dragon Riders will be Daenerys. And if you don't read the books, you know, there are three Dragon Riders. The dragon has three heads means there will probably be three people who will ride the dragons. And book readers think the likely candidates are Daenerys, Jon Snow, secret Targaryen, Tyrion, possibly secret Targaryen, or Bran sort of warging into a dragon as like a pseudo rider. Yeah, so those are the four main candidates. Mm-hmm. So if we are going to find out that Tyrion's a Targaryen, we should find out soon. And it would add a little like layer of delicious irony to that scene last season when he tells Daenerys, there's no more Targaryens alive, you know, like to support you.
Mm-hmm.
Quick sidebar. I swear I'm not paid by this person. But if you perchance have not heard me raving about this on Twitter, I suggest you go to YouTube. A guy named Robbie McD put together a video called R+L=J: Who is John's Mother? All Scenes Compilation-Game of Thrones. It's a very, very elegant title. He did this like 4 months ago, so it includes scenes from last season. And it's amazing. It's so good. It's not amazing in that like it reveals anything we don't already know, but it's so elegantly done. It pulls in scenes that like you wouldn't think applied to this concept of Rhaegar Targaryen and Lyanna Stark being Jon Snow's parents, but obviously do when put in context. I maybe even like it better than anything I saw in season 5, except for Hard Home. It's so well done. So I really suggest you go find that on YouTube. So Dave might drop it in the show notes if he's nice.
If I'm nice and remember while I'm editing this. if we're the Jon Snow like resurrection obviously hasn't been touched on the books, but is that like the beginning of like this, is stuff going to start happening really fast just out of necessity at this point?
Define really fast, because George R. R. Martin takes like 8 years to write a book.
Well, I'm saying very like, long. Assuming that, you know, him finishing his novel series by the time the series is over is a lost cause already. Like, since we don't know the overall shape of this story, we don't know sort of like where it snaps. Thus far, it's been a very deliberate build of medieval politics. But at some point, it's going to snap and become crazy ice zombies versus dragons. And it seems like if we're in a season where we're going to learn not only the three-head of the dragon prophecy, which I don't think has been on the show, correct?
I don't think so either. At least not like explicitly talked about.
Yeah,
so
we bring that
it's
up.
Not as overt as it is in the books.
We bring that up and then instantly know who those people are going into the next season. Seems like a rapid, you know, acceleration of this series towards its end game, because it's like, once you do that, how much do I care about what's happening in Dorne?
Well, what I'm saying, I don't think like Dorne is gonna have all that much to do, and I agree with you, they need to start consolidating, which they've already done. Like, they're starting to unify plot lines, whereas before it seems like it was all about breaking them apart. You know, like, if we have the Battle of the Bastards, and, like, there's a possibility that Bran, Jon, Rickon, and Sansa are all there, then that's, like, a huge amount of reunion by episode 6 alone, right? But my prediction, or, I mean, I think it's just fact, right, is that I believe the season's going to end with Daenerys in King's Landing. So that's a huge consolidation of plot. Like, all of Essos is coming back to King's Landing. Whether or not it just ends with her arriving or ends with her just conquering it, and then we don't even have to fuck around with King's Landing next season and it all moves up north for the final battle, then, you know, I don't know, but that seems...
That seems really fast for this show, just what you described.
It does seem a little fast. I think...
Daenerys going to take, if she takes 10 episodes to get to King's Landing, or even 9. I mean, the thing is, like, George R. R. Martin originally wanted this to be a trilogy, and by the third book, Daenerys, I think, no, maybe by the second book, Daenerys with her Dothraki horde got to King's Landing. Because he stretched it out, he had to have her lose her Dothraki horde, fuck around in Meereen, and then get a whole different Dothraki horde in order to get to King's Landing. You know, that needs to come to a head soon.
I feel like there's a way that they can do that that's not quite as fast. One, I don't think the Jon Snow thing is like the turning point where things start accelerating. I think there's a lot to do after that. I think that whatever turning point exists, it'll be kind of a two-part thing. One will be somehow the White Walkers crossing the threshold of the wall, mm-hmm. whether that means the wall comes down or they just make it through or whatever. That will be kind of a turning point that accelerates, because then they're in the realms of men, and winter is actually here. I feel like actually this is one of our reader questions, which is, ooh, do we think Daenerys is going to cross over this season? I think yes, but I think she only makes it to Dorne.
Who is the person that asked that question?
This is a question from Ryan Silberstein. It was a two-parter. Will Dany cross into Westeros? And something about, is that who Cersei is referencing in the trailer? Which I don't...
I think, is she talking about
what he's referring to?
Is he talking about the part where she says, where she's talking to, like, it seems like Tommen, but she's probably talking to Jaime, where she says, you know,
right out the head of your army.
Yeah, or... show them what a leader is, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like that's probably River that Run. Might be related to the River Run.
No,
stuff.
I know it is. I'm just saying, is that
So then the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
But the Will Dany cross, I think the only reason to keep Dorne in the show, which I think we know from casting at this point, is that's the landing point for Dany. Like, that's the if Tyrion and Varys are there to advise her and say, like, listen, we need to go to somewhere that's actually, like, Targaryen friendly. We can't go right to King's Landing. We got to start. We got to get all these horses on the ground. So maybe we start in Dorne and we push up to King's Landing.
Okay, I buy it.
So I feel like her landing in Dorne is kind of a cool way to, like, finish the season.
Yeah. Because
then it's just, like, her with more brown people. She's like, hello, I'm here to save
I'm
you.
I'm here to save you.
Oh, lift God. Me up. To the center of you.
And the Dornish people are just like,
eh. I guess I would feel better if we resolve our, like, Kingdom of Men thing and it is, like, the White Walkers crossing the wall. And I would be okay if that happened before Dany touched down in Westeros proper. So it's like, mm-hmm. even when she shows up, she knows it's not about, you know, conquering the Lannisters or whatever. She's like, you know, broke the wheel or whatever the shit. But, like, by the time she gets there, it's like, now it's something else.
Well, somebody's going to have to. I mean, I don't think so. You know, and you guys know this from playing a lot of Game of Thrones Risk. You can't just jump over, you know, the Riverlands and King's Landing and the Crownlands and the Westerlands. Let's assume Jon and Sansa take back Winterfell. I don't feel like they have any ambition to, like, go south and take out the Lannisters other than the revenge thing. I feel like it's going to be one of those, like, Dany brings up the rear and mows down King's Landing on her way north to fight the real war.
Well, see, my question is, does the real war, I'm staring at a map of Westeros right now, but I don't need to because I've played a lot of Westeros Risk and Game of Thrones Risk. Where does the final battle take place? I don't think it's at the wall. I think Dave's right that they cross over. You know, Dorne's right at the bottom. So if Dany's coming from Dorne with her dragons, mm-hmm. and Jon and Sansa are coming from the north, do we converge on King's Landing? Is this where, I mean, we believe that it's going to snow in the throne room, right? Because
right.
of a vision, and we believe a dragon will fly over King's Landing because that's also in the vision, right? So mm-hmm. are we going to have dragons and White Walkers in King's Landing? Is that where a final battle takes place? And if so, how expensive is it going to be to, like, destroy Dubrovnik or whatever?
I don't think so. I think it'll happen out in a field in the Riverlands.
It might.
There's no way. I do think there will be, like, a siege of King's Landing with a dragon, but I think it's gonna be a pit stop. I think it'll just be, like, on the way. Like, okay, oh yeah, so we destroyed King's Landing, and now we're
they'll put it somewhere in the river. Else. They'll put so it somewhere, you know, like the Trident or something. Recognizable.
Yeah,
or,
I was gonna say the Trident would be perfect because that's where this all started.
Or what about Harrenhal, which is already a ruin? So let's just ruin it more.
Right.
I feel like we need, like, a really identifiable place, and King's Landing is that. And for show watchers only, like, the Trident doesn't necessarily.
Or maybe it happens at the Twins.
Maybe.
Well, I like the idea of, like, the crossing. Like, Dany gets somewhere in Dorne and, like, starts moving north being like, ice people, but, like, the Lannisters are goddamn crazy, so they're like, oh no, Targaryens. So they're pushing down, and whoever's in control of the north and on Jon Snow's side is like, we really need some help up here. And so that's what pushes, like, the conflict more and more towards, like, the center. I still say Trident.
Okay.
That's my new vote.
That's the most poetic place for that big battle to go, because it really was the Battle of the Trident where Rhaegar Targaryen was slain by Robert Baratheon that started the whole story in the first place.
Yeah, and it'll be a good, like, you know, someone will have a line
about it.
Maybe it
takes place at the Tower of Joy. Sorry.
Which is in the south.
Yeah.
I think. It's all the way down by Dorne.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe.
That's where the dragon lands.
Oh, man. Awesome.
Another thing we can glean from the trailer is that it looks like Yara goes to Volantis. So when Daenerys comes over, it might be that she has, like, Yara with her
mm-hmm.
To help stop Euron Greyjoy, possibly. I don't know. I don't know what Yara's motivation is. Either to align herself with Dany to take down Euron, or sent as Euron's envoy. It's
right. There is the whole Victarion Greyjoy right. storyline where he's going to go to Meereen. He's actually part of the siege of Meereen.
Right.
And he's going to go also woo the Dragon Queen, which is, like, everybody's thing in the books. And it works out for literally zero people. So I think that maybe they go, maybe he's got a dragon horn and he's like, she's like, I'm going to go control one of these dragons and just get it for the Iron Islands.
Oh, the Iron Islands are on such like a weird, inconvenient part of the map. Okay. So what I mean, she has to go all the way around to get to Essos.
I mean, they could go the other way, right?
No, because isn't there like beyond Essos? Isn't there like other weird continents that we never talk about?
Yeah, well, where Melisandre's from, Ashai is over there.
No, but I thought it goes like way beyond that. Like,
oh, I have no idea.
Okay,
is the world round?
I think the world's round.
In Game of Thrones,
the world's
or
round.
Is it flat?
What was I going to say? I'm sorry.
It'd be like sailing from like. Instead of sailing down around South Africa or South America, like if you left San Francisco to go to India, you would just sail straight.
Well, do we have any reason to believe that she actually has to go back to her dad before embarking on this journey?
Yara?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's going home for the King's Moot.
The King's Moot.
But seen her in the King's Moot?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Right. She's like, I believe it's between Yara and Euron. Mm-hmm. Like in the, well, yeah. That you know, the Iron Islanders, you know, get ready for everyone's favorite family, the Greyjoys. The Iron Islanders are going to have to pick a new ruler between a charismatic, non-eye patch wearing Euron Greyjoy and Yara, who apparently swings both ways. And because they hate gay people, they're going to go with Euron Greyjoy. So.
Fun.
Good times. Right. But like if Dany comes back to Westeros and we think Arya is coming back to Westeros too, right? So like everyone's just going to be consolidating. Yeah. Anyway, I don't have a point.
How do we get to the Arya comes back to Westeros point?
That's something we've talked about on the podcast before.
Right. That's just kind of an assumption of like where else would her journey go?
I mean,
right.
Maisie Williams has said that A, she thinks people are going to be bored with her plot this season, which is great news for those of us who were bored with her plot last season. This might be misdirection, because I think Maisie Williams is like the most skillful troll of all the Game of Thrones actors. Mm-hmm. But A, she said we're probably going to be bored with her plot. B, Arya is brought very low. And C, we're not going to see much of her, actually. So, you know, Arya might not be quite, you know, Bran exiled for a season status, but she might be way sidelined this year.
Right. So she's going to eventually end up back in Westeros, but there's no reason to think that's going to necessarily happen this season that we've seen, right?
It's like right.
Wanted consolidation, Dave.
Well, I mean, look, I'm trying to differentiate between things that we're speculating on versus like what we've seen versus like things that we just want to happen because it logically makes sense. Nothing that we've seen in the trailers has said that Arya is coming back to Westeros.
Right. I believe she'll be leaving the House of Black and White. I think that's the thing we can say for sure.
Parkouring right out of there.
Yeah, parkouring right the F out of there.
And then we talked a little bit about the book part of the theater people, thespians. That's going to pop up probably.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can we talk about how Cersei is going to take down the Sparrows like real quick?
Sure.
Seems.
It would seem so.
Like, I don't know happens, but like, I mean, we know the Sparrows have Margaerie. But in that whole thing in the first trailer where Cersei says, I choose violence, and then in the second episode, in the second trailer, we see what looks to me like the same scene because one of those Sparrows behind Lancel is then immediately getting his head popped off by the mountain, the Franken Mountain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it looks like at least that confrontation between Lancel and Cersei, and I bet you Lancel, RIP Lancel, it just depends when that happens. How quickly in the season that happens, that makes her stand.
It's got to happen pretty quick, right? Because there's also Jaime and the Margaerie family.
The Tyrells.
The
storming,
Tyrell army.
Yeah.
And then we've seen, like, I think they even released, like, you know, a clip of Jaime talking to Cersei over Marcella's corpse from the premiere. So at some point they like talk, and then Jamie like forces him out, but she's got to send him to River Run, and that seems like the something that someone in charge would do. So that has to be resolved by then. So it's got to be pretty early, I would assume.
But does that mean we don't get
Clegane Bowl?
I don't think Clegane Bowl is happening. I think both
like ever.
I don't know. I think both Clegane brothers are in this episode or in this season, but I don't think they're necessarily going to fight each other. I don't think she's doing trial. I never thought that, honestly. Like, I always believed the Hound coming back, but the contortions it needs to get the Hound back to King's Landing for the fight when he's chosen a life of like peaceful obscurity doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Unless somebody tells him that his brother is still alive.
Maybe
he's just popping heads down on King's Landing.
I don't mean to be a wet blanket, but I just feel like unless everyone starts fighting in the battle at the end, and then the Hound sees the Franken Mountain, and then they fight. Maybe, but
I mean, it really feels like a season 7 episode 2 kind of thing.
Sure, sure. yeah, but well, all I will say is that I think it's really fun to root for Cersei. And we haven't really been able to root for her, because, you know, she is evil.
Is horrible.
But everyone loves an underdog. And so it's fun when Cersei says, "I choose violence," for us all to be like, yeah, they made her walk naked through the street. Now she's going to have her revenge, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just me?
I mean, you root for her. I'm not rooting for her to like win, but I'm rooting for a comeback because she's an interesting character, and she's more fun when she feels like she's in power, because then she does really stupid things and that makes better drama. So I'm rooting for her to like get her confidence back.
But I mean, also like the Sparrow represents, I mean, I don't want to make this about gender politics necessarily, but I will say, well, I don't have to because Loras is in prison too. The Sparrow represents some weird puritanical religious garbage that I'm not a fan of, right? And so, you know, for Cersei to take him down using her zombie friend and her brother lover, the liberal me is down with that. So
sure.
But
what if the Sparrows ultimately win?
Ooh.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I think the Sparrows are going to die this season.
What if they find a champion who's like also kind of undead? Like he defeats them out. I'm fighting for all of our listeners right now. Like, damn you, Joanna. We want the Clegane Bowl. I want it too, you guys. I want it too.
Dave, what were you going to say?
Oh, the thing I like the most about it is I was worried that with the Cersei prophecy that she got, that like her... Marcella dying would sort of make her like quiet unhinged, not like mad unhinged, and I'd much rather see mad unhinged. So I'm not on her side in any sort of way. It's just the better character outcome than I would have predicted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. If you're on Cersei's side, like me, let me know.
The pro incest side. If you like incest.
If you're team incest and murdering innocent people, let me know.
Can we call it team femincest?
It's not just feminism.
That's right.
I think that's Yara's team. Right.
All right.
Yeah, she's also dabbled.
Yeah.
So it's true. It's true. What was I going to say? Oh, can we say just like, I mean, we've sort of been rambling about the trailer. Should we say like one last moment in the trailer that we want to talk about quickly
before moving on to questions?
Yeah.
Sure. I'll go first.
Okay.
Red Band trailer, crappy music soundtrack. Trailer 2 has like the most generic, like falling strings, shit's going down, like chanting bullshit, and it shouldn't work, but it gets me so psyched.
I hated that Chris Isaac cover in the first trailer.
It was bad.
It's terrible. Neil.
Trailer 2, Walder Frey.
Yeah. For me, trailer 2, I have a question to pose to our listeners. A lot of people have tweeted me about this. We see a brief shot, a shadow relief on the wall, somebody stabbing someone, appears to be in the back. It appears you can see the Iron Throne cast a shadow on the wall too. A lot of people think this is a flashback to Jaime killing the Mad King. Like, people are 100% convinced that that's what it is, based on, you know, very little, but we've made conclusions based on less. So do you see that in the second trailer? And if so, does that explode my theory that all of the flashbacks this season would be Ned Stark centric? If we get a Jaime Lannister flashback.
Could be Targaryen centric, I suppose. But you're right. The listener should answer this question.
Well,
Neil can answer if he wants.
Well, no, I guess if Bran's things are going back through Stark history, there were Starks there, weren't there? That right after they burned one?
I don't remember when he stabbed. I should look this up. I don't know when he stabbed Aerys relative to when Ned's brother and his father were there. But we do know that they shot footage of that back in season one. I don't know if they would splice it into this season, but it never made it to air. But they did shoot footage of Ned's brother.
Or maybe it's like one of those like the Rey's dream sequence in Star Wars, where it's like a bunch of shots all together and it's all just like book reader, you know, book porn for like 10 seconds.
It's like,
and it's all these different shots of things we should know. And it's it doesn't actually mean anything.
It could be, I think that's
like Bran's out there just trying it out. And
it's like the dragon shadow over King's Landing or Snow in the throne room. Just like a sort of flurry of because we had that shot in the trailer of Bran like hooked into the root network and sort of gasping himself awake from whatever vision quest he was on. So yeah, you're right. It might just be part of a like quick flash of a number of things. So
right.
Okay. Oh, quick flashes. Look, HBO, I'm going to have to pirate your goddamn show to frame by frame it if you start pairing shit with quick flashes. I apologize.
No, Dave, don't worry. I'll get my HBO Go login and we'll screenshot the hell out of it. It'll be great.
That is still inconvenient. Screenshotting HBO Go, I'm sorry.
It's actually a huge pain in the ass.
I want to press the arrow key and go to the next frame like a normal person.
This is a new segment on the show where we are going to answer your questions. Do we have any? We don't have an email for this show, do we? No.
Yeah, we do.
Do we? What is our email, Neil?
I think it's stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Hold on. Let me try and log into it and see if that works.
Okay. You can go to findingthewarroom.com/gotspoilers and leave a comment on any given episode. We will be reading those. You can always tweet us at stormspoilers. That's where our questions for this episode come from. So you can tweet us questions there. Or, Neil, what's the email?
Hold on 1 second. I'm going to log in.
Or you can send an email.
Oh, totally a thing, guys.
Yay.
Is it Storm of Spoilers or just Storm of Spoilers?
It's just Storm of Spoilers.
Okay, so stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
We have emails.
Okay, we will be reading those after the show. but for right now, we're going to answer some questions from Twitter. Neil, take it away.
Okay. So we got a few of these are quick hitters. A few of these go together. First, a question from our man, Pat Spanoggle.
What's his handle on Twitter?
At Patman23. He's a good follow for Game of Thrones fans.
Yeah, he is.
He asks, will Potato Ollie, I don't know where the potato thing came from. Will Potato Ollie die by ice, White Walkers, or fire, Burning Cross execution, or will he be redeemed?
Ooh. Dave, do you have any thoughts?
I hope he dies by ice, but it seems like if you're going to make this amalgam character, it's just like being somebody who went to college for screenwriting, like the impulse is to make him get redeemed. So if that happened, I wouldn't be surprised. It's byproduct of TV show adaptation.
I have a third option, or I don't remember how many options I was given, but my other option is by Wolf. I hope that Ghost grabs him by the throat, drags him to the top of the wall, and tosses him off. So I guess it's kind of ice. That's kind of ice. That's how much I hate Ollie, guys. Nice. Neil, what's your answer?
I hope he just gets stabbed. Like, straight up stabbed. Stabbing a little kid is something we haven't seen on Game of Thrones just yet.
We've seen archer in my village.
We've seen unborn babies stabbed, but we have not seen an actual young child.
Didn't we see a baby stabbed when
Oh, right. Well, like babies, but like thinking we need like a prepubescent teenage boy to get stabbed to really sell it. So there you go. So yeah, I think just stab. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't had one of those since season 2 was our last prepubescent boy stabbing, I believe.
Who are you talking about?
Arya was in the prison thing, and the Hound sticks one of them, right? With the little, he's like, "I'll help you carry him."
No, it wasn't the Hound. It was the other guy.
It
was one of the douchebags that Arya later killed in the end.
Worg, Biter, one of those. I don't know.
Right, anyway, Polliver.
We have stabbed prepubescent boys before is the important thing that I remember.
Next question comes from Simon. He is at Hogarthian Bear. Some of these are really good, by the way. This is a simple yes or no question. Following the October 22nd podcast comments on Night of the Seven Kingdoms, should I catch up on World of Ice and Fire? To which I would say, you should absolutely get that book because there's so much in there that is like secondary fill-in-the-blanks information about history. Especially if you're a nerd who went through that trailer and picked out sigils, that's your book. So...
I think there's also extra R plus L equals J stuff in there if you want it.
Oh, for sure.
And Night's King stuff. I think that's where the bulk of the Night's King stuff comes from. So.
Yeah. Have you read that? Had you read that one, Dave?
No, but I do want to pick it up when I eventually get to the territory of reading ancillary things to this series.
Cool. Here's another quick yes and no from at Real M Soy. Is there a chance that the showrunners may stave off John's resurrection until next season?
No.
No.
Not even a little chance. I agree. Let's see. Here we go. From Jason at Back with Black. How likely are we to see Lady Stoneheart this season on a scale of 9 to 10? I feel like our thoughts in this are pretty well known, but... the idea that Brienne and Podrick are traveling through the Riverlands.
I know.
I
still hope so. In the second trailer, right, we see Pod get grabbed when he's standing on the... I don't know why he's standing in the Lannister camp to begin with, but when he's standing in the Lannister camp looking like he's having a good time, he gets grabbed from behind by someone, and I thought it was an outlaw, and he was, like, on his way to get, you know, strung up by Lady Stoneheart, until our friend Kevin Fitzpatrick from Screen Crush pointed out that it's definitely Bronn. Who grabbed him.
Although it could be an outlaw with the same gloves.
I saw the most hilarious... okay, I saw this great... Another listener, Jesse Karp, pointed out to me this great Reddit thing where someone had analyzed the ear in that shot and compared it to Bronn's ear, which is the best thing I've ever seen. But the gloves match Bronn, and the straggly hair on the neck seems to match Bronn too. So I think that's probably Bronn.
Yeah, if the gloves fit, we must... acquit.
Yeah, I acquit the outlaw.
What did we learn from American Crime Story?
The opposite of what you just said is what we learned from American Crime Story.
That's true.
I got more.
Yeah.
Our friend Brendan B. Fish, who's another good follow for Game of Thrones fans.
Oh, the best follow.
I feel like this might be obvious with the new trailer, but who will release the dragons? It's Quentin in the books, but Tyrion, Yara, and a Sand Snake or a random Son of the Harpy are all kind of candidates that he proposes for the show. So who do we think is actually going to let those guys free?
I'm so sorry we talked about this earlier, because now I'm just reveling in the idea that one of the Sand Snakes gets roasted by a dragon.
We have some really great women characters planned for this series, you guys. They're called the Sand Snakes. They're going to have so much to do.
So, yeah, my and then Yara is also, you know, we talked about she's going to Volantis. She's probably headed towards Dany, you know, and so she's an interesting choice. But my fingers crossed for Obara. Yeah. Dave?
Okay.
Yeah, I like the idea of the Sand Snakes. I feel like, yeah, no, I like that idea. It should be somebody we know for sure. I know that Tyrion surviving a dragon flame seems unlikely to me. That's about as far as I go.
What do you think, Neil?
I mean, I feel like the Tyrion scene, it lines up with me that maybe he survives and then lets the dragons out. I don't think he's going to get, I don't know if we're going to find out that he's like a lost Targaryen, but I feel like he's smart enough to like at least get him out of there. So we'll see. I think Tyrion's the most likely candidate because of that trailer. So, okay. All right. I have two more. One should be quick. One actually might be a good discussion point. This first one comes from at Vala Morgulis.
Nice.
How is Brienne going to end up meeting Lady Stoneheart? Does she abandon Sansa? Does she take her with her? Does she lose her to the Boltons? So the kind of the mechanics of why does Brienne go south?
I think it's such a good question. I think I asked this of Neil off air. I also asked what happens to Pod after Bronn grabs him. That's a weird question for me. But a possibility, since we know that the Siege of River Run is about sort of Bryn and Blackfish totally fending off the Lannister advances, if Sansa becomes sort of the de facto Queen of the North, and if she hears that her uncle... or great uncle is in danger, then she could, and if Bran is sort of hooked up with her at that point, she could ask Bran to go help, or she could ask Bran to go treat with Jaime if Jaime's the main aggressor, knowing that Bran has a relationship with Jaime.
Yeah, politically that makes sense.
That's me like ascribing like immediate political prowess to Sansa, which I'm fine doing. In my opinion, she can be a Mary Sue this season for all I care. Like, she can immediately know how to do everything. She could
she's earned it though. I feel like she took a couple for the team.
But I'm saying, like, if she starts like sword fighting and is immediately better than Arya, I wouldn't blink an eyelash. I'd be like, yes, I'm sure. It's like sewing. It's your needle. You got this. I don't know. Anyway, Dave.
Does Sansa know that Arya is alive?
Oh, Bran would tell her, right?
So here's... Okay.
Man, Dave.
Okay, so here we go. Here we go.
The captain now. Okay, sorry.
So, Brienne saves Sansa from the Bolton hunting party and Reek fucks off because he's a coward. And Sansa orders Brienne to go back if Arya is alive, to regain Arya because she's the other part of the Sworn thing. Swear she makes to Catelyn, while Sansa goes north regroup with Jon. Because assuming she doesn't like do something stupid like go to the Umbers and like have some sort of weird one episode. Realizing she's in danger when they pretend to be nice to her because they have the other Starks. But I like the idea that Sansa, you know, is still kind of cold to Brienne, but commands her like her mother would.
Yeah, I've heard some people theorize that Sansa would be a good candidate to take over for some of Lady Stoneheart's actions without actually being a zombie, but just being hardened by her experience and pissed.
Wouldn't it be a way to exact vengeance and sidestep having to kill Jaime Lannister? Because like Catelyn's the one who's hesitant for Jaime Lannister. Sansa is just sort of like wouldn't have it much more in for the Freys.
Yeah.
So if you don't have like the sword moment, you don't drive them into a moment where they have to have mortal combat. You drive them into like emotional combat.
I still think that they are going to have to get to the place where they pit Jaime against Brienne because it's very dramatically satisfying. Is it not? To have Brienne torn between her honor, which is a big thing for her, and her emotions, her feelings for Jaime. Well, I'm too bodice ripper about it. But
couldn't you do that without doing Lady Stoneheart now is the thing.
Yes, but why? Why would Brienne have to fight Jaime? Because Bronn took Pod? Who knows? We'll find out.
Ooh.
Oh, hey.
Starting, we can piece this together.
I love, Dave, I love your whole like Bran tells Sansa that Arya is alive thing. It hadn't even freaking occurred to me.
It was a deep cut.
And it also like makes me flashback to Arya going up to the gates of the Eyrie and just walking away.
Yeah.
Still makes me so mad. That was so annoying. All right, what's our last question?
Last question, speaking of the eerie. This comes from Jan Sudemeyer at JHS810220. First of all, tip, don't put your license plate number as your Twitter handle. The question is, what is Littlefinger's role in season 6?
I think he's okay. We talked about this in season 5, how it was confusing, what happened with the whole Cersei thing, but basically he has control over the Knights of the Vale and they're key players on the board of a battle that might happen up north. The only shots I believe we've seen of Littlefinger are of him standing beautifully cloaked in the snow. I think that's it. There might be like a close-up of him looking mildly
anguished. So at least we know he's in it.
Yeah, he's in it. He's got the Knights of the Vale under his control. And so who will he give them to? Will he give them to the Boltons or will he give them to Sansa? I mean, I feel like he gives them to Sansa. Like,
obviously.
Right? So, do we think
there's going to be more to his story this year, or is he going to like show up as like kind of a deus ex machina toward the end and just to help him with the battle? How much of the scheming Littlefinger do we think we're going to see this season?
I think I'm sorry, Dave, do you want to answer any of this? Sorry. I know Littlefinger's your bro.
Oh, I'm just trying to, I'm doing research. You could answer.
Okay. Dave's going to drop another bomb on us. I think if the Battle of the Bastards happens, and I think we were not going to see much of him at the beginning, but we know he has the Vale Knights in theory. So if the Battle of the Bastards happens in, say, episode 6, I think it's possible to see some of the outcome of that, because it'll be an uneasy alliance. Like, we think we know that, you know, we're rooting for the Wildlings and we're rooting for the Mormonts and we're rooting for Davos and we're rooting for all of that. But like, what does a wild card like Baelish in a fight like that mean? And, you know, if they're victorious, then what, you know, he's like a viper in the nest sort of thing. There's the question of, do you remember the details of Davos's plot? Because I feel like Davos is maybe in danger this season. And, you know, based on book stuff. And is it possible that Baelish could be involved in that in any way?
Sure. Although I really do like the idea that Davos kind of ends up just with Sansa. I actually think the interesting thing about Littlefinger is, so if you think about Sansa's arc, where she was, you know, the girl who wanted to marry the king, the girl who wanted to become queen, just kind of this naive girl from the north, who then became a victim for a long time, who then thought she was getting her footing, and thought that she had this great partnership with Littlefinger, only to be dropped off to be the victim again. If she ends up being kind of the de facto queen of the North and amasses this army, what's that relationship going to look like when they meet again and they're on essentially equal footing?
Well, so I sort of hope that that's what the Snowy Woods scene is her confronting him and saying, "You left me and this is what happened to me. And
you're either going to help me or I'm going to murder you."
Yeah, or I'm going to murder the shit out of you right now. So, and then Nymeria the wolf shows up and growls at her side. I don't know. Yeah, I want Nymeria to come back soon. I'm really so sad that Sansa doesn't have a dire wolf. And I know that Nymeria isn't hers, but, you know, whatever. Close enough. But I don't know what kind of scheming, or if, like, if the Battle of the Bastards happen and Winterfell goes back to the Starks, let's say that happens. Does Littlefinger then go back to King's Landing to help the Starks manipulate some shit down there?
Right. Does he try and marry Sansa? Does he try and do something weird? Because the only thing we really know about his plan at this point is that he wants to be Warden of the North. Like, that's what he told Cersei.
Yeah, but he told Cersei he would bring her Sansa's head. Like, I don't know that that's what he wants.
Right.
He just wants power, whatever that looks like.
Right. So maybe he evolves a little bit. I mean, the question, really, the more interesting question is, does Littlefinger have something up his sleeve for all of this mayhem that appears to be about to happen?
The chaos ladder that he has helped build?
Right. Does is there another, is there one step further that he's already achieved that we can't see right now?
Which is, I think, working, is
the interesting thing about that character.
Is he working with the Night's King? Is that your question? If anyone is working for the Night's King, it's Peter Baelish.
It's Littlefinger. He's like, well, you know, I'm going to go. The Night's King told me I could have the Eyrie, but he's going to take everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what Baelish wants in addition to power is, I don't know.
He wants Sansa. Well, he wants Catelyn.
He wants Catelyn.
Who is Sansa when she dyed her hair black. So, as creepy as that sounds, that's what he wants.
What if Lady Stoneheart comes back and murders the crap out of Peter Baelish this season?
I mean, all of that sounds fun.
Okay. Dave, what did you want to say?
Oh, I mean, I have no connection, but if I were to guess where the Littlefinger would feel like the most at home in an arch plot, how does, in the book, what brings Euron from wherever he is? Like, initially.
Euron comes back for the Kingsmoot. Right. He comes back seriously right around the time.
He's back to kill his bro, which we know from the trailer, basically, right?
Right. But who facilitated that?
Oh, that's I like that call. Dave, you're so good at this. I like that. I like that Baelish is somehow pulling some strings around the Iron Islands.
Well, the reason I would say that is because I want to put him in a position that is against Varys with my natural inclination. So if Varys is trying to get the dragons and Daenerys, so a Targaryen rule could come back, then Littlefinger would be the person that would eventually put Euron in a place to send Yara to try to free the dragons without a Targaryen.
Huh.
Presumably? I don't know.
With a dragon horn.
The biggest question mark we have of this season, and I am not trying to zag off this, I just don't want to forget, is we don't know what the hell is happening in Horn Hill, in Old Town. Like, we know Sam and Gilly are getting on a boat from, I think, a publicity still, but they have not been in the trailers, right? Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen any of the Tarleys, which we know they've all been cast, but we haven't seen them. So that's a big gray area this season, is we don't know what's mm-hmm. happening.
Right, and it almost feels like, not that there are any, like, true throwaway narrative threads in this show, but it almost feels like that's one of the ones where they're kind of punting on for this season, where it's just like they'll show them, and maybe they show up at Old Town at the end.
Maybe they learn from
Old Town story later.
Maybe they learn from Dorne, and they're like, oh, okay, don't introduce a whole new region and a whole bunch of new characters all at once.
Right.
With like, only Sam and Gilly to anchor us.
We'll check in with Sam and Gilly and we'll meet his family. And then he makes it to Old Town and that's like the end of the season. And then they can build out Old Town for next year.
They did cast pretty great. We know Ian McShane's basically like in a scene, and Max von Sydow is probably going to have just a scotch more airtime than he did in Star Wars. So they're not above like casting great actors for small roles, but they did cast up that family pretty well with the guy from Unreal playing his brother and with the guy from Downton Abbey playing his dad. Like, you know, these are not nobody characters. So I think that I don't know. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what they do.
For sure. There's a lot that we haven't seen, which is what makes the whole idea that the Battle of the Bastards could come mid-season really exciting, because, I mean, there's 4 or 5 episodes of stuff that they haven't even put in trailers yet. So.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I think cool. That's a good segue, because one of the very scant news items we got from the premiere from Untrustworthy Entertainment Weekly was a quote that said most of like the Red Band trailer was footage from the first episode. Which
I'd have to go back and watch it again, but I feel like that's probably about right.
I think that's reasonably accurate. And I think usually they would send 4 episodes out to press in past years, and usually all the stuff that was in the first 4 episodes was in the trailers, but we didn't get much beyond that, which is what, you know, which supports Neil's guess that Battle of the Bastards is earlier. But then the Siege of Riverrun would have to be earlier, you know, like that's a lot to pack into the first. But I think there is a whole, I would say there's at least a back third of the season that's a gray area. We also haven't seen any of the Arya theater stuff, which might just be one episode. I don't know, but
well, and the way that they're describing it, which we always take everything that the official public official production people say with a huge grain of salt. But the way they're describing it is, especially the visual effects thing, was really telling. That it's like, this season is unlike any other season because it's just like bam, 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 tons of huge stuff. So if there's two big battles within the first like six episodes,
yeah,
that to me would make a visual effects guy go, yeah, you guys won't believe what we're about to do, because then there's like a whole another huge battle maybe later. So I think it makes sense if we kind of operate on the assumption that these first couple trailers are really like the first two thirds of the season at the most.
I mean, the thing that I always think about with Game of Thrones is that when it's to like sort of block it in episodes of four almost. I mean, it's 10 episodes, so you can't quite do that, but we'd always get those four screeners and then two more blocks of three. And something big would always happen in the first fourth episode. That's like when Daenerys had her big burn down. Mm-hmm. Not Astapor, not Yunkai. I don't remember. Lots of fire dragons. Astapor gets her unsullied. That's a episode four thing. There's usually
smoke monster baby.
Yeah, there's usually some,
it's episode four, season two.
There's usually some big thing on episode four and then episode nine. But if we have one of those almost every episode. If we've got the Battle of the Bastards, if we have the Siege of Riverrun, if we have, we know that Dany has a big dragon moment with the Dothraki, you know, like if every episode has one of those holy shit moments, if Tyrion's big dragon thing.
Stop building this up. That's not going to happen.
I don't know. The FX guy said that there's like three. Dave, if you haven't seen this FX video, you should, because if only to see the like cranes that breathe fire that they build to stand in place of the dragons. It's so great because like they don't just CGI the fire in there. They build like a thing that shoots fire that moves like a dragon, but it's not a dragon. It looks so
well, and they build a truck. I was watching. Yeah, I was watching the season five commentary tracks for an article that I'm working on, and. They talked about that.
On Film School Rejects, your site that has a beautiful new platform.
Yes, thank you. And they talked about the one of the, I think Michael Slovis was on one of the commentary tracks. He's one of the directors. He directed the first two episodes of last season. And they talked about the rigs, and the reason why they did that was all from a lighting standpoint. Because the lighting, apparently lighting is like the number one thing that they think about at all times with this production. Is they have to use a lot of natural light. They have to light rooms that don't have lights in them. So it's a lot of window lighting. But the Dragonfire was one thing that they knew they were never going to get right CGI. Like the way that that fire interacts from a lighting standpoint with everything around it. So, yeah, they built these huge rigs and just shoot fire at stunt people. It's pretty great.
It is great. Can those lighting people turn on the lights in the House of Black and White? I'd appreciate it.
No, because then we'll see the ceiling, and you could never see the ceiling.
That is one thing they talked about. There's one where it's the production designer and Michelle Clapton, the costume designer. And they talked about the House of Black and White being like the hardest thing to shoot because it's lightless. It's also colorless. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Awful.
It's not much fun. More fun frame by framing through those sequences either.
So. Oh my God.
What was I going to say? Oh, we should, yeah, keep an eye on the costumes this season because Michelle Clapton has done the costumes for five seasons and is not on the show this year. So if you see a demonstrable dive in the costumes this year, that's why.
That's why we haven't seen any of the thespian stuff. It's like, oh, sax, whatever.
She said
her stuff is so amazing.
Yeah, it
the
is.
The detail that she goes through is incredible.
The reason she gave for why she left after season five, I mean, I'm sure she's just exhausted and done, but like she said she wanted to do every region. And so once she did Dorne, she was done. She was like, that's the last region I hadn't done. So, I mean, at least then they have like a template to go off of.
Now I just get to watch the series.
How nice. What is there anything else we want to talk about? We've been talking for so long.
Well, let's do this. We got the premiere episode coming up. It's called The Red Woman. Some of us know things that we shouldn't. Some of us don't. Is there?
I don't know anything.
Is there something that you feel like you really want to see in this first episode, Joanna?
No comment.
Oh, not fair. I wonder which one of us knows things. Neil, how about you?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to see if anybody dies.
In the premiere, just straight up.
Anyone. Could be anyone. Everyone's on the table.
So. Nice. I'm holding out hope.
I hope that's vague enough for you.
No, that's good. I'm holding out hope for some juicy visions, because I love me some world building. And if it can't be a vision about banking, which would be my ultimate favorite thing, it could at least be some good, solid world building.
A vision about banking, or a vision about the infrastructure of religions, which is more interesting to you? Ooh.
Are you trying to tell me something?
No. That's just based off of like what you've expressed interest in the past.
Oh, no. I would like some infrastructure of religions, but I feel like we're going to be getting that as we approach our gigantic Fire Ice finale. But I think we might be done with banking, which just makes me sad.
No, I think we'll see Mark Geddes again. In the books,
they can't foreclose on Stannis because he's not around anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why he comes to Westeros, right?
Yeah, in the books, that's why.
Maybe we have seen the last of Mark Geddes. What a waste.
Real sad.
Boo.
Or maybe he shows up in King's Landing just at the... Like, he shows up and he's like, hey, you guys, you need to pay your debt. And then Daenerys comes and fries everybody.
He goes
to Meereen and he's like, this queen owes me dragons I'm repossessing. And then he gets burnt.
No, what if he helps Daenerys?
What if he is the financial backer of the Night's King? Those ice swords don't pay for themselves.
What? No, that's exactly what ice does, is pays for itself.
What about their fancy armor then? What about the fancy Night's King armor? And they've got like, don't they have non-ice swords this year? Didn't we see them with like a curved sort of...
They've got fancier stuff.
Yeah, they've got fancier swords this season. They've got a weapon dealer this season.
What you're saying is that both Littlefinger and the Iron Bank of Braavos are in league with the Night's King.
Yeah.
Okay. we've made it. We're at the Citadel.
The Citadel of Crazy. I wanted to bring us there.
We were being too reasonable until now.
Yeah, that's right. It was such a reasonable episode.
Can't you see the Iron Bank of Braavos backing the Night's King?
Okay, as long as the Night's King promises not to cross the narrow sea, I guess.
Let's be real. No one's backing Well, I mean, they haven't talked at all yet, right? We've never heard a White Walker talk.
That's true.
It's hard to negotiate if you can't speak. But maybe you could just spell out what you want using the bodies of your victims and some horses in the snow. All right, I'm done. We've been podcasting a while.
They do horse, dead horse art.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they're mandalas, only spelling out words to negotiate with both Littlefinger and the Iron Bank of Braavos to get backing for their army of undead.
Now I'm rooting for them.
Damn. So we got a little over a week before that. Until then, you could apparently email us at stormofspoilers@gmail.com. You could for sure tweet at us at stormofspoilers. You can find all our episodes at fightinginthewarroom.com/gotspoilers. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. Guys, where can they find you? Let's start with Joanna.
You can find me on vanityfair.com writing about Game of Thrones. You can find me on Twitter at JoeRothis tweeting about Game of Thrones. And please do leave us a review over on iTunes.
And I'm Neil. You can find me next week writing like 14,000 words about Game of Thrones on filmschoolrejects.com and on Twitter at rejects.
And until post premiere, we will send you off into that dark and terrible night.